What are you going to do 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when the baby boomers are gone?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Tom. I'm going to keep having tons of kids.
There you go.
Shout out to my wife, Brittany. She just had our fourth child last Sunday. So yeah.
Congratulations.
That's limited. You know, you can only produce one child every, I don't know, 12, 15 months.
That is a plan.
I'm trying to increase the throughput here.
Also Nick, wir reden heute über Automatisierungstechnik und wie gesagt, was passiert, wenn du heimgehst, hörst du Maschinen?
What?
In deinem Shop. Hörst du noch Maschinen oder ist es...
Nick, this is an English podcast, Caleb.
Oh, Entschuldigung.
Talent is scarce. Experience even more so. Driving up costs and sleepless nights. You may even think to yourself, can I do this? But this new era brings new technology and a different perspective on your operations. What you will hear will turn on a light bulb in your mind so you can turn out the lights in your shop. Get ready to sleep soundly while your shop never stops. Get ready for making chips lights out.
So I know we've been doing a lot of new things on Making Chips. We have like all these new shows. We do not have a German show.
Not yet.
not yet. But we do have a kind of German guy, and excited to introduce Caleb Mertz, the co-host of Lights Out, the one who actually has a lot of automation experience, happens to be my cousin. And yeah, just a little bit about your story, kind of introduce yourself to the audience first with why you were speaking German.
Yeah, no, great question. Sometimes I get a little confused. So any of my friends listening to this would be upset if I didn't say it was Austrian. So Austrians are very proud of that. So I got a little bit of both. So,
and it doesn't sound the same. Like, so you learned German, right? As a kid.
Growing up.
And just because we're a German family, your dad's a German teacher. But then where did you go to high school?
Yeah. So then I kind of followed my grandfather's footsteps, our grandfather's footsteps, and went to the same technical college that he went to when he lived over in Austria before he immigrated to the US. And so I went there for 5 years instead of high school. Yeah, it was a great program, great experience. Mostly
shout out
in
to
Megatronics.
Austria, Germany. Like they do this thing called HTL, which is like, what's that mean?
It's like higher technical college, but it's basically at 14, you can choose to go into a technical field. You can choose to go into business. You can choose to go to kindergarten, teacher school,
art, design,
like, there's literally everything.
So instead of like what we do in the States, where we just like throw everything at everybody and then they have no idea what they want to do until they're in their 20s, you can kind of start to specialize at an earlier age. And I think that's awesome. That's something that we should probably replicate here.
Yeah. So living over there, I didn't hate it. I loved it. So I continued in that, came back and went to university in the States. Yeah, ended up getting into automation after college and worked for an integrator for quite a while. I loved it. Got in the weeds on programming, PLCs, robotics, everything, designing full automation systems. At one point, you reached out to me to come back to the family business.
I reached out to you 85 times until you came back.
It probably was 85 times.
Yeah, well, that's the direction that things are heading. That's the reason Lights Out exists. We needed somebody in the fourth generation of our family to kind of bring in that higher level of digital understanding and automation and all the things that you bring to the table. So happy to be co-hosting with you. We're going to have so many cool interviews now because just what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, working with customers, trying to automate their machine shops and the network that you're building, and just we're going to have no shortage of great interviews. And speaking of great interviews, we have an awesome guest today. So I'm going to introduce him. He's no stranger to Making Chips. This guy's been on before, but I just took like a couple notes from your LinkedIn and things that I really liked as I introduced you. One thing you wrote, when people say that's not my department, then that's my department. And this is from an earlier position that you had, but this gentleman works like an internal consultant. So he goes to an area of the company that's maybe underperforming, helps assess the current reality, recommends, hey, here's some value-added changes, and then he implements implements those changes. And we just got an incredible tour from Tom Schroeder. So welcome to the show. Is it Schroeder? Am I saying it right? Schrader?
If you're doing the German, it's Schroeder.
Schroeder. Yeah. With the umlauts, right?
The Milwaukee people say it's Schrader.
Okay.
And the people that are not German at all say Schroeder. Yeah. So we prefer Schrader though.
So right. Tom Schroeder, the executive vice president at PBC Linear, a company local to our stomping grounds here. Super happy to have you on, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And also thank you for the tour. Like, I love to record right after you get a great tour because you just have like better questions and so many things that are fresh in your mind. So it's really amazing what you've done here. It really is. So, but before we get into it, okay, I've got a chip on my shoulder.
Are you tired of putting out fires? Is the coolant starting to go bad? Are your cutting tools edgy, or is that just how you're feeling? Chances are we've been there too. So we have to ask, what's the chip on your shoulder?
All right. So a lot of times the chip on your shoulder episodes come from conversations I find on LinkedIn. And Caleb and I'm going to show this to you too, Tom, but like Caleb and I were looking at this thread here and I got to shout out Rebecca Wolfinger. I think that's how you say her last name. She's doing a ton on LinkedIn, but her post wasn't even meant to like stir up any, I guess, conflict or drama or anything. She was just naming all of the funny names for that tool that you deburr with. It's got like a rotating handle. Nobody knows exactly what it's called, but potato peeler, rotober, burr whip, knuckle nibbler, whirly diddle, wiggle chisel. What's your favorite one, Kim?
Yeah, wiggle chisel. I mean, you can't beat it.
I think it's the wiggle chisel. So anyway, she's just like laughing about this thread that she found in some machinist blog and the comments like blow up. This one guy I really liked to read from, his name's Jason Primo from Acclaim Aerospace. So shout out to you, Jason. You put good stuff out there. He just posts in the comments like, hey, thankfully I have not had to use one of these in years because we program all of our parts to come off burr free. We do the programming, we do the deburring in the machine. Well, that starts like a really cool conversation where she's like, hey, by the way, that's what we do as well. We get great results and consistent quality. But a few years ago, her husband Curtis worked at a shop that flat out refused to deburr in the machine. Management said deburring in the machine took up too much machine time. But being the forward thinker and rebel that he is, he like physically showed them the time difference between a program with and without deburring. And he calculated the time and money not needed to employ somebody to just do deburring, which is a terribly boring task anyway. And they just still didn't care. And so what's the result? Well, it's one of the many experiences that added up to creating mil-spec manufacturing. Rebecca and Curtis, they left and they started their own business. And she writes, that kind of backwards thinking will always become an anchor on success and growth. And we just did an episode the other day about like, do we need more manufacturing entrepreneurs? And one of the things we talked about is like, hey, as a business owner, you know, we're Tom, Caleb, me, we're all like in the family business. We all do own or will own our family's business someday. And it's like, I actually do want a lot of entrepreneurs. I think it's great for the industry. And I want my own employees to be entrepreneurial, but I don't want them to feel like they need to leave my business because like we are so stuck in our old ways or whatever. What I talked about on that episode was like being intrapreneurial, finding employees who have like a great vision, maybe a new product line or something new, and they feel like they can do it within the business. And you create a way where they can do it within the business and they're thrilled to do so. And you kind of like teamwork and synergize. So what are your thoughts when you see that article? Can either of you resonate with the Whirly Gig article or whatever she called it? Knuckle nibbler.
I've got plenty of stories around that. But to your point, I tell my supervisors the goal is to make them the CEO of their department.
Yeah.
So that they own it. They have the pride of ownership. They look for new ways to make improvements, etc. But yeah, I had a situation just like that where the powers that be wanted a department to run 24/7. And we figured out over time, and it kind of had to do this behind the scenes, that we had no reason to run that department 24/7. If we run the right quantity of parts, if we run the correct amount of parts and level load the year, we can kill all overtime for that department. So had to go from running day shift, night shift, lights out, weekend load and goes, to we went 2 years without running a single hour of overtime in that department just by the right planning.
Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily I live my whole life by this quote. If you're not making chips, you're not making money.
Right.
It's like, what is that movie? Ricky Bobby, right? Where he's like, if you ain't first, you're last. Yeah, he's yeah, like, yeah, Dad, yeah. I live my whole life by that quote. So in your case, like, it's not just if you're not making chips, you're not making money. It's
right.
You got to make the right chips. You
correct.
Know?
Correct.
And make the right parts at the right time.
Yeah, because otherwise it's you're making chips to cost you money.
Right, right. All right, Caleb. So what resonates with that chip on your shoulder segment we just did?
Yeah, I think it's just anyone that knows me is I question a lot sometimes, which can be a good thing, but also get me into trouble. So, you know, you got to be tactful about it, of course, but I resonate with that in the sense of it's so easy, especially I have a lot of respect for our operators and machinists. And when you're doing things day on, day out, to just do that as routine.
Yeah.
And so like to create a culture of starting to actually question things and like why we're doing it this way and kind of digging into the numbers and figuring out what actually makes sense. And so we want to encourage that too. And I think it's important to create an environment where people feel they can do that. Like you said, in your case, making them the CEO of their own environment, giving that accountability for that team is, I think, a huge thing.
Yeah, for every answer, a more beautiful question. That's a quote from this book I read and I loved it. Unless I'm talking about my 2-year-old who just says why over and over again until you're ready to just jump out the window. So those questions are not beautiful. But anyway, today, the meat of the episode, we're here to talk about considering flexibility, how to prioritize flexibility when you invest in automation. And Tom just showed us like just incredible examples of automation throughout PBC Linear. And it's not like rigid either. You know, it still allows for a lot of flexibility and to do things with wisdom, not just this obsession with output. So really pumped to dig into it. And I guess I'll just tell you why I wanted to record. The last time we met, we recorded an episode about like machine monitoring. And did you have this MCM already? Or were you... Do you remember?
Back then, we were in the stages of purchasing it.
Okay, yeah. So I knew it was new. And I was also like in the early stages of launching Lights Out. And I was like, we're going to come back and talk about this someday because this is incredible. So just take us back to like kind of set the stage. Like nobody knows anything about this. And what caused you to take this leap and make this massive investment? Like what were some of the challenges that you had to overcome?
So we, back in the early 2000s, PBC invested in its first flexible manufacturing system. And they were Hitachi Seki FMS is the first one. Had 2 machines and 16 pallets. And then we got another one that was 2 machines and 24 pallets. And we used those for a number of years. And then another one came on the market and it was 4 machines hooked up to 72 pallets. So we've been using the machine that was 4 machines and 72 pallets for just about 20 years. And when we bought the equipment, it was used and produced in the late 1980s. So needless to say, over time, it's getting harder and harder to repair, to get parts. When it goes down for longer, even if you're doing PMs. So we looked at it as it's a major risk because a lot of our milled parts go through that piece of equipment.
And it was really 4 horizontals, right?
It's 4 horizontals hooked up to a 72 pallet change system. But in reality, too, we're also limited by it because the tooling. We have some special cutters and step drills and other things and some expensive tooling. If you wanted to move a job from machine 1 to machine 2, you either had to have duplicate tooling in every single one, or you had to manually go in, pull the tools out of machine 1 and move it to machine 2 and redo your setup.
So not very flexible.
Not very flexible.
You either got to like double, triple, quadruple your tooling cost.
Right, exactly.
And like how big is the tooling magazines anyway?
260 tools in those machines. So you essentially, it was treated like a automatically fed 4 standalone machines. So one of the... We made the decision that we were going to start looking for a new system. And my father found this great company in Italy, MCM. They primarily service the European market. And he went over to Italy and poor him, he toured the Ferrari factory and the Beretta factory.
Wow. Awful.
It's painful. And we ultimately selected them.
It's like when you start passing the business down, you get to like still do all the fun stuff. Buy the big equipment, go to Italy, where the sales guys wine and dine you.
Yeah. So we went with MCM and we selected the system and we went through the whole process of rehabbing the building, pouring the foundations, getting the system in, training on how to run the system because it's almost entirely different from the way we currently do things. And then we had to start moving the work off the old system and onto the new one.
Okay. So as we walked by on the tour, I was like, oh, look at this huge Fastum system, FMS. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's probably not actually made by Fastums, but that's when I see those racks of tombstones, that's what I think. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, and you're like, yeah, we're actually taking it all down. We're in the process of kind of like moving that all to the new system. So how does the new system solve that one issue that you brought up with tools limited to the machine that they're in?
Yeah. So the new system compared to the old system, not only does it have a central tool storage system, it has a shuttle that moves the tools around and all the tools have RFID chips in them. So the system knows, hey, this tool, it's got these dimensions, etc. And when, let's say there's a special boring bar, an expensive boring bar that's on machine one and machine four needs it, the tool change system will pick it up, shuttle it across three machines and drop it into machine four.
So like essentially what a person was doing before.
Essentially what a person was doing. But since there's also RFID chips and the machine knows what it is, the operators didn't have to go in and tell the machine, hey, you now have this tool in this position.
Okay. So the MCMs are still 630s. So you didn't change the size of the pallet. Machine to machine, is it pretty equivalent? And now you've just got this centralized tool system, or what else changed?
So the machines are identical. A couple other improvements over the old system. One, when in the old system, you could only load and unload a single pallet at a time. The new system can, while it's machine like one pallet, it's got another pallet on the outside and then it rotates 180 degrees in. So there's less downtime on that. The old system had a maximum of 7,500 RPMs. The new system has 14,000 RPMs. The old system, you have to use like CamWorks to program every single part on the fixtures that go on the tombstones. The new system, you program one part and then you basically tell it, hey, that one part, move it down 2 inches, 4 inches, 5 inches, move it across 2 inches, 3 inches, 4 inches, whatever. And it automatically generates the programming and the tool paths for where those parts are at on that fixture.
Wow. It's pretty advanced.
It's pretty cool to watch it work.
Hey, Metalworking Nation, Jason Zenger here. Do you know I operate on NetSuite, the ERP when you need one source of truth for all of your data, your CRM, your accounting, your operations, everything. If this is you, you should know these three numbers, 36,000, 25, and 1. 36,000, that's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, streamlining accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, and more. 25. NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close their books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. One, because your business is one of a kind, so you get customized solution for all of your KPIs. In one efficient system with one source of truth. Manage your risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve margins. Everything you need all in one place. Right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/chips. That's netsuite.com/chips to get your own KPI checklist. netsuite.com/chips. Do it now.
So as you were explaining this to us, you kept being like, oh, and we just learned this and we just learned this. Like, so it's kind of like all these Easter eggs. You bought the machine for what you bought it for, but like you're getting all these upgrades.
Yeah. We didn't fully understand all the bells and whistles, if you will, of what came along with this, especially on the software side and the scheduling side. So it's just kind of been a great, great process of learning and how to utilize a piece of equipment effectively and how to maximize your output out of it. Just moving parts off the old system and onto the new system, updating the tooling, updating the programs to accommodate the tooling and the through spindle coolant. We're seeing on average at least 40% reduction in cycle times just moving from the old system to the new system. And that's not even optimizing the existing fixtures that we had, because that's all we did was we brought the existing fixtures we had, we brought them over to the new system. We had to recut them, but we reprogrammed them in the new system. So we didn't really change our fixtures per se, but we saw a 40% improvement.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you're describing here is if someone is listening to this, right, and maybe they're getting a little bit more into it, right, they don't have $6 million to invest in a new flexible
at least
system. Yeah, at least at minimum. What are the kind of the basics of getting into this, right? So when you're starting to automate, you mentioned a few things in what you just described, but especially in a high mix environment, right? Because some people listening to this might be like, I have a smaller shop. I'm also have a high mix of work. What does that look like for you?
Yeah. So we have, I mean, we are a high mix, low volume company. And I say the low volume in just some of our parts. We could do over 100,000 of them a year, but we have essentially 400 part numbers that generate an incredible amount of our revenue. And then we have 3,800 parts that it could either be a one-time order or maybe it's like 10 pieces a month. It's not something that you would invest a huge system on, but we've also learned to adapt that huge system to accommodate those small parts. So let's say you just have 10 parts that you have to run a month. You can build a little fixture plate with Mighty Bites and things like that to hold the parts, stick it on a fixture in a vise. And now guess what? You have an interchangeable fixture system that you can use the bigger automation. Or, I mean, we use them a lot on just like little Haas TMs and Haas VF3s and things like that. So there's always ways that you can utilize your current equipment and be able to run multiple parts at the same time without having to make a huge investment in capital equipment.
I like how you started with fixturing. Caleb can speak to this, but like so many of our automation opportunities start with fixturing, you know, and then from there it's like, okay, what's next? So what's that one we're working on right now?
Yeah. So there's a few opportunities that we run into often being a fixture builder where customers will come to us and say, I know I need to optimize my processes, get more throughput. We want you guys to make these small custom fixtures. And we might even bring up, if they don't bring it up, about doing quick change systems, right? Have two of the fixtures, one inside the machine, one outside the machine. That's a pretty easy way to get started. Load them directly to a vise, but even more so even better would be to a zero point system, right? You can just quickly exchange those in between. But depending on your cycle time, you still have an operator sitting there changing those out maybe every half hour or hour. So it's better than it was before, loading parts in a machine that's sitting there, but still not as good as it can be, right? And then that's where we lead them into, hey, what about loading parts into the system using automation or a pallet system if it's high mix of work where you need different parts on different pallets? So like that progression, I think, is something that resonates with me a lot, just being in the fixturing world and the automation world and how that so heavily ties in. It starts with the same questions of like how you're processing your part, what the cycle times are, what you require to get more throughput.
It's funny. You're right. It all starts from the same place. And it's like, I always think, you know, you see that image, that graphic of like the caveman kind of like evolving into a human, like step by step. We've all seen that image in our minds. And the end where it's like not even a human anymore, it's like some AI driven cyborg, is like what we just saw at PVC Linear with the huge MCM system. But like all these considerations, they build up to something like that. So, I mean, you just talked about like, Tom, you just went back and talked about like, hey, why not just have like a lot of clamping stations on a fixture plate instead of doing like one part at a time in a vise, you know, have the vise clamp the fixture plate. Now you're doing maybe 10 parts at a time. Okay. Maybe you're doing that on a vertical. Okay. Maybe you add a trunnion to it. Now you're doing four sides. Maybe you take that and you just make that whole thing a horizontal someday. And now you've got like, okay, great fixturing. You're utilizing four axis. And like, okay, how do you get gains from there? And then gets into like the automatic loading and unloading with the pallet delivery. And we see all of that in this MCM solution that you just showed us outside. But there's all these things that are kind of like contingent. You know what I mean? Like you can't just buy all the stuff and like all of a sudden it works. There's other considerations. And what we were sitting there talking about as we were walking from one shop to the other, there was a couple, like, what about this or what about that? That could kill your lights out.
Yeah, just like, let's say you just had a standalone horizontal or vertical and you needed to automate in some form, whether that's part loading, pallet loading. What are those things that you have to go through before doing that? Like, a lot of the advice that we give as a company for even just fixture building, but also for automation, is getting your processes in place before you even move forward with that. And so sometimes we'll actually delay a sale that we could get sooner than later because we're like, hey, these are the things that you have to work through before we can actually deliver this fixture automation to you. Otherwise, it's going to be unsuccessful. And I'm sure, Tom, you can speak to some of those things on your end, but things like chip evacuation, filtration, coolant management, you know, using high pressure systems, the list goes on and on. So what are those for you? And even starting off years ago, what that looked like?
Automation is a skill. And just like any other skill, you got to do it a lot before you get good at it. And you have to use the concept of failing forward, right? You're going to try a bunch of things and you're going to realize, okay, here's a bunch of ways where this doesn't work. So you've got to really look at it and just every single problem you come up with, you got to have a solution. So one example in one area of our shop, we have some bar fed lathes. And there's one,
yeah,
one
there's part automation,
of,
right?
Yeah. There's one part of the operation where we've got to drill a hole. And we went through the process, and this was a long time ago. We went through the process of, well, we would drill it and then we would bore it out. So that's two tools, right? So then the people at the time thought, well, let's drill it to size. So what do you have to do to drill it to size? You've got to consider, well, one, we need to have the right drill that holds, because we have a unique ID, we have to hold 5/10, let's say 5/10 to a thou. You've got to look at, one, you got to have the right tooling. Two, we had to get high pressure coolant systems to evacuate the chips from it. Three, you have to look at your whole drilling cycle. Are you peck drilling, or do you have some kind of chip breaker or something in there? Because just in general, I think long stringy chips are like a nemesis to automation. They just cause so many problems. So you got to make sure you're breaking your chips and you're not having long stringy chips. But all that came at the cost of scrap parts. Learning all that came at the cost of scrap parts and figuring it out. So you've got to just get into the process. And then every single issue that you come up with, you've just got to come up with a solution for it. So you're not going to just say, hey, tomorrow we're going to automate this and then it's going to work perfectly. If you do that, come work for PBC. But it's a process, just like anything else.
Yeah. And so much value comes from the journey itself, right?
Correct.
And so like, I love that fail forward concept. And it kind of ties back to the chip on your shoulder thing. Like, when you want to do something new and there's people who are kind of maybe locked into the old way or the way you've always done it, anytime, we've all met people like this and they're the worst, but like anytime it does fail, to be like, see how that didn't work, or like, see how they didn't have the right drill, or see how the chip stringer shut it down and we only got 2 hours of unattended instead of the whole light out night. And it's like, yeah, okay, we got 2 hours, but next week we'll get four and something else will happen. And then eventually we'll get it dialed in, right? And so you kind of like need the failures. You like almost want them, you know, within reason, because like each time you learn something and it helps, you know, your company culture evolve. And that's one of the things I love. You talked about like the human element of automation at PBC and some of the human capital. We all know people are retiring and the dynamic changes. Like, we actually need automation because there's less people who know how to figure everything out and run a bunch of different machines. So let's touch on that a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm a big data guy and somewhat of a nerd. A while back, like within the last year, I went on the Department of Labor website, the Federal Department of Labor website, and I started looking at the demographics for manufacturing durable goods, which is the sector that we're in. You go back to 2010 in the census, and the largest demographic was age 45 to 55. And guess what? In 2020, the largest demographic is 55 to 65. And the next generations that are coming in aren't coming in at a pace that's replacing the people going out. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when the baby boomers are gone?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Tom. I'm going to keep having tons of kids and they're going to...
There you go. There you
You're
go.
You're doing That's a great job.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to my wife, Brittany. She just had our fourth child last Sunday. So yeah.
Congratulations.
That's limited. You know, you can only produce one child every, I don't know, 12, 15 months.
That is a plan.
I'm trying to increase the throughput here.
You're doing your part now.
No, but I mean, that's a good point. It reminds me of like the kind of the problems we hear about in China where they don't have like a replacement population. Like the birth rate over there is way lower than people are like aging out and passing on. And what that does is it kills the economy. And so there's a lot of challenges coming up for the Chinese. And like we're, a lot of our shops are like little versions of that. We're not bringing enough new kids into this. And a lot of people are aging out.
Right. Yeah. I was just listening to a news podcast and back in like the 50s, 60s, the average birth or the average number of kids a couple would have was like 3.7. Now it's down to 1.8. Apparently, in order to just sustain our population, you have to have an average birth rate of 2.1. So one way or another, I know Nick's doing his part to bump up the numbers.
Yeah.
But one way or another, we are forced with, we have to learn to do more with less.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you mentioned kind of the human capital, and that's where the birthplace of automation has got to come from. You got to look at what your employees are doing on a daily basis. Even if you can save 30 minutes of time a day, and it doesn't matter if it's on a machine, if it doesn't matter if it's a manual task, it doesn't matter if it's reading your email, for example. If you can save 30 minutes a day, that's in an average work year, that's like 127 hours, 30 minutes a day, every single day. If you can save someone from doing something, you gave them a month of their life back. And that's also a month that they can do more work for you.
Right. And better work, like work that they actually want to do, you know? So you talked about being a data guy, kind of a nerd. Caleb is our nerd. I mean, he's like the biggest nerd we have at our company. And one thing that both of you guys kind of reminded me of each other is like automation. It's not just like robots or pallets, like moving mechanical things around. You've been adding automation into our white space processes, our digital processes too. And it's kind of like what you were just saying. So
it's like finding, we talk, our leadership talks a lot about waste, and it's finding that in everything, right? And so automating the physical things, but also like, it's amazing what you can find kind of digging into people's day to day, you know, in the front office and how things get out into the shop. And so it's starting, even where this gets into a whole different realm, but we're really getting into tracking how long it takes us to quote and do things like that, which I know you guys have come up with a few solutions on with automating through your website, right? So it goes beyond that too, thinking a little bit differently, because if people grew up in the shop, then that is maybe the area they're more focused on, but not realizing the potential outside of that too.
Yeah. So as Caleb mentioned, one of the things that we did was we made the decision years ago to build a configurator to allow two things. One, from the customer service side, a customer can go on, configure a product, make it their own, get a quote, download a CAD model, drop it into their assembly, see if it works or not, and then place an order.
That was huge for us. Like, you know, I came from the marketing route, and once we added that to our site, it was like a huge generator, but you were talking about it like a whole new level to it.
Yeah. So we took it a step further. So not only after someone hits buy now or whatever the button is, it sends an email or it automatically enters the order into our ERP. But then we also used it on the back end where they configure a part and it automatically creates our drawings for every single operation that has to happen. It automatically creates the inspection sheet for every single operation. We've got another third-party tool that will take it from the configurator and upload it to our ERP system. So now the items, the BOMs, the routings, the materials, etc., automatically gets put in. So the long 5+ year journey from a very smart person, shout out to Ethan Kinney, he kind of developed this whole process. And 10 years ago, we had 8 to 10 people doing the work that now 2 people and the configurator do.
Okay. Wow. So I think here's the big question to kind of wrap it all up. Do you have less employees overall than you had 8 to 10 years ago at PBC?
We probably have 75 to 100 more employees.
Okay. So this whole like automation, what if it takes our jobs and I want to keep my people employed? Yeah. You want to keep your people employed doing things like, what was his name? Ethan? Doing things like what Ethan did and not deburring a part over and over again and doing mindless work that where you just go home and you want to just kick your dog. you know what I mean? Like you actually create jobs, you create growth, and you create people who go to work like inspired to think, like you said earlier, take ownership. Like, hey, I run this function and I've got these KPIs and I work at a place where people are equipping and inspiring me to try new stuff. How can we cut waste out of it? Caleb talks about like our leadership is always trying to cut waste out of it. And every day I just get threatened to get fired.
I mean, automation should really be focused around getting rid of the non-value added activities, whether that's on your shop floor or whether that's someone having to delete spam emails every single day. Doesn't matter where it is in the organization, the non-value added needs to get removed. And then you can, your employees can focus on the value added.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So thank you again. Just incredible tour, just an incredible experience. We ask our audience to help us a little bit. You know, we need help. How can they help us at Making Chips or Lights Out or whatever the hell we're called now?
Yeah. So look up Making Chips on all platforms. You stream audio.
Podcatchers, as they call us.
Yes, podcatchers. And yeah, rate, review, reach out to us and share. If anything resonated with you, share it with others around you.
That's the most important one. It's like, okay, give us 5 stars or make a comment or whatever, but like send it to somebody that you think could be impacted from it. And I think my big takeaway from the show is, you know, we talked a lot about, okay, flexibility, and you hear all the time, oh, I don't have the right work for automation. And you showed automation from everything from like a 3D printed little fixtures that help load your machines more automatically to bar feeders all the way up to this however many $1 million massive investment that was like kind of the showcase of automation. And so like you didn't get to where you have like a one of a kind solution from no automation at all. It was all part of a journey. And so that's what was impressive. And, you know, I know there's probably a lot of people listening right now, like, oh, I have 15, 20 people in my shop. Well, think about where you can eliminate waste, where you can add automation and all the things you need to consider, whether it be chip management, coolant management, the people you have, the tooling you have, all the things that we talked about. It was a really great episode. So thank you for joining us, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
And what we always say, you've got me questioning it, man. We always sign off the same way. You know, if you're not making chips, you're not making money, but you got a new way, huh?
Yeah. My take on that is if you're not making the right chips, you're not making money.
Bam.